Good morning, DJ.
Good morning.
Why did you come back?
I was invited.
Oh, okay. That wasn't really the question. Why did you come back?
I'm a masochist.
Oh, sweet.
Macabre interest. Yeah.
Okay, I can see we can take this in a completely different direction then than what I was planning on.
What direction was that, James?
I actually didn't have any plans. I was spending all morning trying to set up and make sure everything worked because this is the first time we've had a guest back in a while. So
right, it is. Thanks. Welcome back to the show.
Really? I'm honored.
Yeah, we got really lazy. We're doing a lot of remote stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And I guess the reason we have you back now is because you're leaving Phoenix somehow.
Yes, I'm moving back home to D.C. In a couple months here.
Yeah. That's crazy. How can you leave this picturesque Phoenix location?
Too hot. Summers have gotten to me. Yeah, I don't like cold weather. I prefer hot weather, but I'm been worn thin the last few years.
It does get to you.
Yeah, it's just exhausting. I can't perform in the summer, so that's just like my income kind of drives up for like a good, you know, 3 or 4 months.
You could be a snowboard.
Snowboard.
You could be a snowboard.
I could be a snowboard.
What?
Snowbird.
Oh, yeah. Maybe go up to Denver or something.
If you don't mind living in your car.
I've done it before. I mean, I did it for a long time, actually. I'm kind of over that stage of my life, though. Right.
That's why I said, if you don't mind.
Yeah. I have a cat now. And
it's worth, it's worth moving on. Or should I say, I said it's worth moving on, but it's probably better to say it's worth moving in.
Yeah. No, it's been good. I was very hesitant at first to like remain stationary anywhere, but you know, COVID kind of forced me to do that, and it's been weirdly good, weirdly productive. Like I've gotten more done with my writing than I have ever before.
I don't know if that's weird. I mean, if you have one space that can be quiet and can be yours rather than being in a small confined vehicle.
No, it makes sense. I'm just I get bored easily, so I tend to just move around a lot. And again, with COVID, I didn't have that option, so I really had to force myself to kind of just buckle down and be good with staying somewhere. And it ended up being great, really. Like, it's really nice to have a place to come back to and walk in the door and be like, this is all my stuff. I own things now. When I first, I was staying with friends at the beginning of the pandemic and just like, you know, sleeping on the futon. And one of them gave me a laundry basket because I was just throwing my clothes on the floor because I didn't own anything other than like what was in my backpack. So he was like, you know, here, use this. And I had an anxiety attack because I like owned something.
No,
I was just like, no, I'm like stationary now. I'm like stagnant. Like this is bad. And now I have a whole apartment with like a couch and I have a cat and he has a cat tree. And
does he have his own couch?
Well, he has his little perch. He hangs out and he'll just like watch me as I'm going around.
Oh, you did say cat tree. I think that is.
That is a cat couch. Yeah. No, he'll sleep at the top and just kind of like.
That's very generous of you to buy him furniture.
Oh, yeah. Well, I, you know, he likes to look outside and I have like a balcony that's a little high, so he can't see over it. So I figured that'd be good for him to, you know, watch the birds and, you know.
So what are you working on now, DJ?
I have a few things going. At any given time, I have innumerable projects in the works. I am working on a short story right now that's kind of been just something I'm playing with. It's a little hard, like with the move and everything, it's been a little hard to like focus because I'm trying to find housing, I'm trying to find employment, so that's eating up a lot of my time, so I'll kind of just like pick at things. But I have a couple poems that I'm editing, like they're, you know, they've been through multiple drafts at this point. So I'm doing that, and then I have a short story I'm working on, and then kind of just like doing a lot of writing exercises, finding prompts online, doing those, and then just journaling and like kind of scribbling notes for stuff once I'm a little more settled.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, someone told me you'd done a commercial.
I did do a commercial. Sir Pivot Cycles, they're based out of Tempe.
Yeah, I know them. Holy cow, what did you do for Pivot?
I did the commercial for their Shadow Cat launch. There's a new bike that launched about a month ago, maybe 2 months ago.
Okay, I'm sorry. I think we're going to nerd out here for a minute. What's the Shadow Cat? I haven't seen it yet.
I will admit, I am not a bike person. I was just approached on the sidewalk, as I normally am, by people who are like, hey, you're a poet. I need a poet. The premise for their commercial was they wanted to have a performance by like as if it were an open mic or like a, you know, like a feature set from a person who is ostensibly a personification of the bike. But the way it was pitched to me is that the Shadow Cat is meant to kind of be like it's an off-road bike, but meant to be a little bit more like casual, like more inclusive. Like it's not like a professional trail bike or something you'd be like competing with. It's more of like
this sounds interesting.
You want to go on like an off-road ride, but something that's a little bit more just like leisurely, I guess.
Does it have drop bars or flat bars?
I don't know what those are.
Flat bars.
Bars are the flat ones. The drop ones.
And drop bars are the curly ones.
I would have to look at it again. I want to say drop, but
that's a common category these days. It's called gravel, and it's a bike that's designed to go on and off.
Okay.
Not necessarily casual. These are, you know, roadies who are trying to do off road, and roadies are a little bit more uptight, shall we say?
Mm.
I'll put it a nice way. I just say uptight. That's me trying to be nice to roadies. I'm gonna have to look up that bike now. Oh, the funny thing about Pivot, did they tell you how much it costs?
The bike?
Yeah.
No.
They're a little expensive.
I believe that. They're very professional. I mean, like all their stuff's very clean. So
they are one of the best brands. Of the better. They're still a niche brand, so they're smaller. But they really push full suspension technology a lot more than most brands do.
Mm.
I think a lot of people follow them. It's funny because I'm sorry, I am nerding out now, but it's a lot of the smaller, more niche brands that seem to really be pushing the technology as far as full suspension goes and carbon fiber. Almost all their bikes are mounted a carbon fiber. And the funny thing was I was down at Gray Matter Bicycles, which here in Phoenix, which is a funny store because they have two locations. One looks like a junk drawer because it's literally they take donated bikes and they strip them down and they reuse whatever parts they can and they resell them and whatnot. So it's just covered with old junk parts. And I love that shop because I go and buy junk parts for my junk bikes. Their other shop, though, they sell more pivots than anyone else in Arizona, which is really shocking.
Sure.
Because that's no small feat, and it's small. It's a small place. But anyway, I was at the second shop with the fancy pivot bikes there, and I was talking to the guy, and he says, yeah, they're doing amazing things with really, you know, these moderately priced bikes. Look at all the whole thing's carbon fiber, the swing arm, the mainframe, everything. And you know, they're really driving down the price. It's like, well, how much is this one? Is it, oh, it's like $7,000 or $8,000.
Whoa.
So that's entry level.
Jeez.
Whoa. Yeah.
No, that's their entry level.
Yeah, wow. That's wild. I did not know that.
It's very niche.
Man, I should have asked for more money. I gave them a bargain.
Oh, you probably did.
Yeah, I mean, for that, shoot.
Wow. So where can we see your commercial?
It's online. It's on YouTube. Okay, just Pivot Cycles YouTube page. The Shadow Cat, yeah, is the name of the bike. So
can I get a discount if I go in and mention your name?
Maybe. I don't know.
I mean, it won't help me because I still won't be able to afford
it. It wouldn't hurt to try. I don't know if like the retail side would know who I am.
No, of course.
But I was supposed to deliver. They wanted hard copies of the poem.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, yeah, we'll get you the information. And they haven't gotten back to me yet, so.
Information about what?
Like where to send them.
Oh, okay.
And like who, like how, well, like how many? Because they were like, I think they were, the person I was corresponding with was like, I think it might be like a dozen or so.
Cool.
That's awesome.
They paid you though, right?
No, they paid. They absolutely, like we completed the contract on all that. It was more about like, you know, just getting stuff for the employees kind of thing. I think they just forgot, but you know.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
It really is.
No, I had a good time with it. It was, you know, they wanted something that really focused on like nature and kind of the transcendental aspects of like riding a bike through, like, well, maybe not the woods here, but like through nature through the desert.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that like I think I kind of excel at. Like a lot of my poems tend to orient that direction of just like a more transcendental aspect. So it was kind of cool to like put that to use, I guess. Yeah, outside of just typewriting. Yeah.
Right.
I think that's very cool. And if before you leave, you know, you might want to head up the other bicycle company we have here in town, which is State Bicycle, which is kind of the opposite of Pivot, because Pivot is trying to do the craziest, most, you know, the lightest, most full suspension-y kind of crazy stuff at really high prices, whereas State started off literally doing single speeds.
Oh, okay.
So the least technology you can have in a bicycle, least, aside from not having pedals. But if you're gonna have pedals, you know, single speed is the bare bones.
How would you not have pedals?
Yeah.
Well, the original bicycles were push bikes.
Oh.
So the big innovation, the French invented it, and I think it was some kind of wooden horse or something. I don't remember what they called it. Some Frenchy thing.
A push bike?
Yeah. No. Well, you push it. You've got two wheels. and it's got a frame, so you kind of sit on the frame, but then you push with your feet.
Yeah,
along
you Fred Flintstone it.
You Fred Flintstone it. That's exactly what I just saw.
And of course, push bikes is what kids start on these days. They don't have pedals on the training. They don't have training wheels anymore. They start with bikes without pedals, so the kids can push, and they're called balance bikes, and they're a lot easier to. So pro tip, anybody who has young kids, don't get training wheel bikes. Go get the push bikes, because they'll learn how to balance a lot faster, and then they can get on. They can start pedaling a lot more easily.
Oh, that's smart. Okay. Yeah.
PSA.
I think I should shut up now because
no,
bicycles.
No, I'm glad you got animated about that. I was worried.
This is not a cycling show. So.
Yeah. No, I'm not going to lie. When they approached me, I was like, I don't ride bikes at all, man. Like, I walk everywhere.
Well,
that's
or a
drive.
Perfect example of, you know, you don't need to do it to be a professional.
Yeah, that's it.
And it's, they're probably looking for a vibe that, you know, if they asked me, I'd be talking about the carbon weave and stuff that nobody cares about. It wouldn't give the soul of the bicycle.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I can't wait to see it. I'll have to look it up. And we'll link it in the show notes.
I forget the performer's name currently, but the lady that actually recites the poem in the commercial also does a fantastic job.
Nice.
Like, her read of it is better than I could have ever done. I'm not like really a performance poet, honestly. I try. I was never a theater kid, you know? I was always more comfortable. Like, me and my friends used to make films all the time in high school and stuff, but I was always the guy behind the camera. Like, I like directing. I don't like being in front of it. It's not my wheelhouse. Does that give you background static? Yeah. I was going to say, do you pick up the pigeons?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah, we do.
Nice.
More
that's
than
very ambient.
Pigeons, because, you know, we had our pigeon discussion last time.
Yeah,
I think
we
were on the opposite side of the fence on that.
I'm still pro-pigeon.
I'm pro-pigeon.
They're chill.
Flying
they don't bother
rats.
Me at all.
Do you like rats, too?
Depends on the context.
In your house?
Not generally.
No.
Well, is it in
car?
A cage or, like, free roaming?
It has not been invited
it's
in your
house. It's not a pet rat.
No.
I wouldn't like a pigeon in my house either. But.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Have you ever been to New York?
Yes.
Okay. Have you seen the rats there?
Not that I recall specifically.
Okay. You would remember if you saw a New York rat.
No, they're I know they're big. I mean, I
well, and armed.
Yeah, typically
with
yeah.
knives and guns
and pizza,
rocket launchers.
No, I have spent a lot of time in D.C. and I took a wrong turn once, just walking from my job to like I was trying to go to a taco shop, and I thought I could cut through this alley, and it dead ended. But there was the largest rat swarm I have ever seen in my life. I mean, like, literally, like, 36 rats, easy. Like, just surrounding this trash can. I was like, that's gross. and I tried to, like, skate around them. And then, because I didn't realize that the alley dead-ended. And then I saw that. And I was like, oh, crap. I started coming back, and they all started running at me. God. And literally, like, I had to get up against the wall like this and just let them pass. And one of them, like, bumped up against my boot.
Ew.
And I was just like, this is the worst day ever.
But a good reason to wear boots.
Good reason to wear. Yeah, I could. If I was like, if I have to kick them, I can absolutely do it in these shoes.
I don't know if you want to start that fight, though.
No, I would have.
Why did they swarm?
I don't. They just decided they wanted to go somewhere else at that point. I don't know. There was food in the trash can or something, but that when I happened to be walking by, like they didn't care about me. They were just like, oh, you're a person's here. They did not care.
That's probably a flash mob.
Yeah, kind of. And then they just all of a sudden, you know, like one bird will take off and they all go flying. I think it was just, you know, someone
it's
started
kind of
running,
a mind
so they
meld.
All started running. A little bit, yeah. It's like the herd
the
mentality.
The herd mentality.
Yeah.
They probably smelled a croissant or something.
Yeah, something happened. They didn't really seem scared. They just seemed like, we're going to go this way now. And
Did they seem like there would be any reason for them to be scared?
No.
I mean, they, you know. You're looking at a platoon worth of rats.
Yeah, yeah.
There's not much that can...
I've never had that experience.
It wasn't pleasant. It was something out of a movie. Like, very, yeah. Just like, oh.
So you're from D.C. and you're returning to D.C.?
Well, Maryland, but Maryland, yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. D.C. metro area, right across the line.
Yeah, same. New York. I'm from New York, but I'm not from New York.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I did live in Maryland for several years.
Really? What part?
Blanking on it now. It was in the suburbs. It wasn't Chevy Chase, but I think it was around Chevy
Bethesda?
Chase. Bethesda. Thank
Rockville?
You.
Okay, Bethesda. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Let me do a clean take on that. Oh, I was in Bethesda.
Oh. I was on the other side of the diamond, PG County, like College Park area.
I don't remember that well. I was there when I was pretty young.
Yeah, yeah.
Pre-high school.
Oh, okay, I got you.
And we were only there for a few years before we moved back to New York.
Bethesda's nice. I mean, that's like money.
It was nice.
Yeah, no, that's like maybe more money than Scottsdale, honestly.
No.
Have you explored all of Bethesda, Chevy Chase, Rockville? Because
okay, I haven't explored all of it, but I went riding a couple years ago up through Paradise Valley, which is kind of like Scottsdale on steroids.
Sure.
Scottsdale
on
acid.
I noticed there was this beautiful house that seemed vacant, so I rode up to the house, and the driveway was all cracked to hell. It had been not necessarily abandoned, but vacant for many years, and there was the property was still standing. You know, the roof wasn't falling in or anything, but it was clearly in need of repair and cleanup. And then I got home and looked it up, and it was being marketed for like $6 million.
Yeah.
So a vacant home in Paradise Valley.
Did you need to repair?
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, you have to do a lot of cleanup on it. It was a beautiful little home, though.
When I first moved to Phoenix, I was still living out of my car. Actually, I was sleeping on the floor of my tattoo artist.
No. We're not talking about tattoos.
No. Anyways.
This one wants one, so I'm a little...
I can recommend to my friend. Okay. She's real good. She did my whole sleeve.
Very cool.
But, I was sleeping on her floor, and I was working for a cleaning company at the time, and was cleaning some of the mansions in Scottsdale, you know, like 10,000, like 14,000 square feet houses.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I mean, there is this one house I cleaned that the master bath had two separate toilets, both of which were, like, automated, and would, you know, the seat would raise and lower, had a bidet, I think it warmed and did all that. It's, like, you know, super, super fancy. I don't know, just an insane amount of money. At that house. Yeah.
Hey, Bird, take it easy.
Chill out, man.
Sorry.
So leaving Phoenix, is there anything you're going to miss about the writing community here? Or I mean, you've made some connections.
I did.
You're very well known. People know you. I mean,
I will definitely miss the community here. There's a lot of people I'm going to miss, and that make it very, it would be very easy to stay.
Right.
And leaving is more difficult than it's been for anywhere else. I mean, part of it is just the duration that I've been here. And part of it is like the connections I've made and stuff. A lot of that's outside of the writing community specifically. I tend to have a lot more like artist friends, like visual artists, like painters and stuff. The thing is, a lot of them are moving too. You know, like you're a struggling writer, you're a struggling artist, like literally scraping by, like hand to mouth. Phoenix is getting expensive. Like rents are going up.
It is.
I mean, gas is crazy. Real, real high, and this is not a, there's not a great public transit system here. So it's just getting real hard to stay. I have friends that have left already, and those that haven't are talking about it for the most part.
We have a sliver of a transit system.
Yeah. You know, it's like the light rail exists and there's buses, but
yeah, well, the buses are.
Yeah, it's just not
very limited.
It's not a place you can really live if you don't have a car. And part of it,
that's
also
true.
Yeah, that's like also in the summer, you can't even ride a bike. It's so hot.
E-bike.
Sure. I mean,
it depending upon how you're doing
hot.
It.
Yeah. It's still brutal.
No, we bought my son an e-bike because that's how he wants to get to school now. Mm. And that's tenable during the summer if you have a fairly short commute.
Yeah, that's. I mean, that's the thing is, you know, when the restaurant I work for was over at its old spot, which is like on 7th here,
right,
on 7th Street, I had a buddy who would come from Garfield. You know, it's like not that far at all. And by the time he got to work, he was just dripping sweat. I mean, like needing to sit down and like chill
hydrate
out for a second.
And, yes.
Yeah, like every day. And I mean, that's just, it's hard if you don't own a vehicle.
It is hard.
Yeah,
Phoenix has always been a town where you needed your own transportation.
I didn't mean to make an excuse for it. It is definitely very much a car-oriented city.
Yeah.
It is a car, yes.
At the same time, it's not as anti-bike as it seems.
There's a great bike culture here. There is.
There are some arteries, you know, if you're lucky and you need to go from one specific part of Phoenix to another specific part of Phoenix, and, you know, you're along the right route, it's actually pretty easy to do it via bike. But if you're not... if you're starting the wrong place and going to the wrong place, good luck.
Yeah.
Good luck making it there alive.
Right. And the further north you go, like I live north of here, there's not lot of, I mean, you absolutely need a car.
Yeah.
It is suburb central and there's no getting around it. And the further north, it's just, anyway.
Yeah. So even if I stayed, a lot of people are tending.
Where are they moving? Just
I got a couple of friends moved to Oakland, and some people might go out there to meet them. I have another friend of mine who he already moved to Houston, but now they're talking about maybe moving somewhere else. I suggested Savannah just because I really like Savannah. Well, I think it would suit him in particular.
You know, Houston's I lived in Houston for a long time too, and I know the art scene there pretty well. And the art scene's not bad. Or when I was there, it wasn't too bad. The music scene was really strong there.
Yeah, I believe that.
Too.
So if you know anyone related or is interested in music, that's probably a good destination for them. And they don't mind the heat because it's hot there and humid.
And humid, yeah. No, I know it.
Plus, there's the rodeo, so, you know.
That's always fun.
What, the rodeo?
Yeah, have you not heard of the rodeo?
No, I don't do rodeos.
Okay.
That's okay. Just moving on.
I don't do rodeos either. I'm just saying that.
In Rome.
If you like... when I was in Houston, I never went to the rodeo, and I was never interested in going to the rodeo. Thank you.
I'll try anything once.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you're a braver man
rodeo.
Than I am.
Yeah.
Yeah. One rodeo is enough for a lifetime.
Oh yeah, that's well. Then you're ahead of me then. So DC, what's the scene like there compared to Phoenix?
Very political.
No.
Yeah. You surprise. No, it's there's definitely a pretty vibrant poetry community out there. I would say, yes, obviously very political, everything kind of, you really can't get away from it. No matter what you're doing, everything is filtered through the lens of politics. And I mean, that's just...
That's discouraging. Well, you know, when I was there, I didn't feel it at all. As a 12-year-old, I didn't really feel like I was politicized.
That's nice for you.
That's not entirely true, actually. The schools I went to kind of had a lean to them.
Yeah. Well, not the first protest I ever went to, I was 6. You know, we were protesting for money for books for my school. Like, it was organized by my school. Because
what, they wanted books?
They wanted books.
How
we
dare
needed,
they?
We needed books. We needed textbooks for the kids.
Need. Define need.
It'd be useful. Yeah. So I mean, it's. It's good because there's a lot of activism that happens through those channels, but it's also just like, if that's not your thing, which is really not mine. Like, I've written political pieces and I have ideas for political poems, but I don't tend to follow through on them a lot of times as much as I do with other stuff, just because it's not my particular forte. Like, it's I'm interested in it. I mean, I worked in journalism for 3 years, obviously, so.
Well, our listeners probably don't know this, but you're as a white male. A DJ, you could, you know, go and right wing it probably pretty successfully down there if you wanted to really just rake in the bucks.
Yeah, no.
You don't want to sell you don't want to sell your soul?
No, I really don't.
I'm just trying to help.
I did that for a time, but
just trying to help.
It eats at you.
Okay.
Yeah, I can't in good conscience do something like that. I refuse to work for Fox. Like, absolutely not.
I would see that it would be kind of difficult. You don't want to write poetry for Carlson?
Tuckle Carlson. no, I do not. I don't think there's a market for it. I mean, like, the people that...
No, there's not, but I'm just imagining.
There's not a market.
There's not a market
I'm not,
for...
I'm not sure what was in my coffee this morning. Maybe it was a little bit of cocaine that went into the, what was it, the Nespresso. Did you see that in the news today?
Mm-mm.
No, I did not.
I did not.
Okay, so apparently an Nespresso factory was opening up their coffee from Colombia, and in amongst the coffee was a lot of white powder, which turned out to be cocaine. But Nespresso promises, don't worry, guys, none of it made it into the coffee. I'm like, I'm thinking they're probably going to have a spike in sales now.
That's, I mean...
Just on the off chance.
Yeah, yeah. Who's to say?
Who's to say? Yeah, that went right over my head. Okay. Nespresso.
You're not familiar with
George
cocaine?
George Clooney's we can go get brand.
What's that?
George Clooney's...
Oh, okay.
Like, is it?
Yeah, I mean, he's in all the commercials. I don't know if he owns it, but he's in all the
commercials. Yeah, he advertised for it. Nespresso. Now I know what you're talking about.
The George Clooney espresso.
I couldn't follow for a minute because I was still focusing on the market for Tucker Carlson's political poetry. I couldn't get my head around.
The people that generally come up to me tend to not be conservative in nature, for the most part.
Well, I was going for the opposite, right? Because you don't strike me as being a righty.
No.
Which is good.
It is what it is.
It is what it is. It is.
I have my opinions. They're plentiful.
But, you know, it's really easy, I think, to make money in that market because they just, if you follow the narrative that is prescribed and you just say what's on script.
Sure.
They'll give you a platform.
Sure, yeah.
That's also not very creative.
Well, it's in a way, it's its own sort of creativity, because you have to be willing to really sell out any kind of intellectual or academic...
bias?
Not bias. No, you have to throw yourself into the bias. But okay. What's the opposite of bias?
There's an art to propaganda.
Exactly.
There absolutely is.
Thank you.
Not one I particularly care for.
No.
But.
Right. You'd rather write for bike companies.
I would rather write for bike companies.
Me too.
Me too.
Or just, you know, for myself, really. Yeah. I struggle with, like, writing for other people just because I did the freelancer thing for a long time, mm-hmm. Among other jobs, and it my attention wanes pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. I can do it. It's fine. I can make money that way, but it doesn't hold my attention. Usually people are asking for things that are pretty uninteresting, I guess, or just like expected and typical. You know, if you want product copy, you know, there's not a lot of...
It's hard to write for laundry detergent.
Yeah, it can be. Yeah, I actually did.
It can be.
My last gig as a freelance writer where I was like, I'm done with this. And ironically, also my only reliable client, I was writing blog posts for a website that, you know, the best bars in like X city and just fill in the blank and like the best dating apps. It was just like a dating website. Mm-hmm. And it was just really sleazy. Honestly, and gross. And I did that for maybe 2 months because, like, they kept booking me for jobs. And then at one point I was like, okay, I can't anymore. This is disgusting.
Yeah, I get the vibe that people are looking for writers for all kinds of stuff like that.
Yeah, no, they people...
Just to fill the space.
Yeah, they just need content. You know, you look online, there is a plethora of writing jobs, just different content, copywriting, whatever. Because turns out people don't know how to write, and they need people to do that in order to sell a product or a service or whatever. It's very easy to get jobs, but also the market's very over-diluted, so it can be...
Is it?
It's very competitive, okay. Yeah. Because everyone's like, oh, yeah, be a freelance writer, and you can be your own boss, and
you live in a
set
van.
Your own hours, and you live in a van, and do whatever. Or, you know, like live overseas, and you'll be making dollars and living in, like, Thailand or whatever the thing is.
I was just thinking of that because I saw a story a while back about a five-star hotel. You could live there for $50 a day.
Yeah, that's a very popular, like, being a travel writer, and you get booked for... You get to stay at hotels for free because you're doing write-ups and all this thing. And, like, the whole thing's a trap, though, because, like any job, you have to work to get that to that position. You have to build a client base. You have to... You're building a small business.
Right.
If you just, you know, join Fiverr and hope that on day one you're going to get this gig that's going to, like, set you up for the next 10 years, like, that's a fantasy. That's not going to happen. There's a million, you know, very adequate writers fighting for those positions, and, like, none of them are going to get it.
Oh.
It's just how it is, honestly.
Yeah, I looked at Fiverr Fiverr. I thought I mispronounced that, but no, that's actually how it's pronounced, Fiverr.
Fiverr.
Every time I say it, I feel like I'm mispronouncing it. I looked at that a couple of years ago, and I pretty quickly came to the conclusion that there's a whole churn of these apps. And Fiverr is an app where you go on, and you're supposed to be able to get a you know, short-term gig or just like a one-time, you go to someone's house to install their, or to assemble a piece of IKEA furniture, or you know, all kinds of little jobs like that. The problem is that these platforms don't really have a way of making money. Like, they don't generate enough money to support their business model. So there's one after another comes up and becomes popular, and then they stop paying because they can't pay the contractors, and then they go out of business, or, you know, there's just a churn. So that part of the economy, quote, the gig economy, feels kind of like a scam.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a little exploitive. I used Upwork a lot when I was freelancing, and they were taking, like, I think it was like 20% of, like, or just straight off the top of what I was being paid if I was connecting through clients through that particular service, which is a lot.
That is a lot.
Yeah.
That is a lot.
Yeah, but from their perspective, it's not a lot. You know, they're making a small amount off a small amount. You know, that's the quandary is, if you want low prices, this is a good way to get a lot of people competing for one thing, but then the price is driven down so far that nobody can actually make money on it.
Yeah.
So how do you stay motivated when you're writing for other people, or do you just prefer writing for yourself now?
I really prefer writing for myself. That's kind of why the typewriter business has taken over.
I still love that so much.
Yeah. like that I enjoy. And I mean, I'm still kind of writing for other people,
right?
Because like, you're giving me the prompt and I'm writing a poem for you that I then hand you immediately when it's done. Mm. But I'm writing poetry for one, which is definitely different than content writing. It's just more enjoyable. It's more like authentic interaction. Mm-hmm. You know, just meeting people in the tree like that. And it is still very much for me, because a lot of times someone will give me a topic and I'll just internalize that in some way that I'm talking about my own life or my own experiences, and then they can just relate to it.
I see.
And they, that's what you get out of it, is more, you know, most good writing isn't me trying to write to a general audience and, you know, speak to some mm-hmm. universal idea. It's about my lived experience, something that's very idiosyncratic and mm-hmm. specific to me. And then people will gravitate towards that because they see themselves in the
exactly.
writing. You know,
or not even if they don't see themselves, they see something, right?
Exactly.
Being able
yeah.
to see a thread, that's really interesting to me, when I see something that's totally divorced from my perspective and I can start to get a sense of someone else's perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. No, if it's earnest and genuine, then that's the goal, right? Mm-hmm. Is to make that connection.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is, like, it sounds very counterintuitive, but is pretty, I think, common writing advice, is the more specific you make something, the more relatable it is, and the more general you mm-hmm. try to make it, the more.
Yeah, that is. I think that is counterintuitive.
Yeah,
right? Because if you do it well, even though it's something that no one may have any experience with, you can give them that. You can give them that experience,
mm-hmm.
or at least a part of it.
Yeah, or there's certain threads within the text, or I mean, really any, like a song, or if you're looking at a visual medium that's like, oh, I relate to this specific part mm-hmm. of the story. And like the rest, the details might be completely different. You know, like I might be reading a story about a gay man in Africa and like his lived experience, but like there's something about like his relationship with his mother or to like another individual that I'm like, oh, I can see myself in this person now.
Right.
And it's like two completely different worlds, but you know, people are people at the end of the day. Like right. we all have the same kind of needs and wants and drives, and that's what good art does, I think.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What I've wondered, you know, because you've been doing the typewriter poetry for a while and people do give you prompts, do you ever keep those prompts or like work it out a different way than what you handed someone in the moment?
No.
I've wondered that, because it just seemed like such a fluid experience.
I mean, generally, yeah, I don't. Like, okay. Someone will give me a prompt and I write the poem and I hand them the poem. And if I like the poem, I'll take a picture of it.
Right.
Like, post it on Instagram sometimes. Sometimes
that,
I'll just
right.
save it for myself. I do use the Instagram more as like a time capsule, is kind of the wrong word, but like just a record.
Portfolio?
So that, yeah, yeah, no, absolutely. Well, part of it's for myself, though, to mm-hmm. go back and pick out stuff I really like. And then I've made 3 chapbooks at this point of just mm-hmm. stuff I've written doing the typewriter thing. So like going back and gathering material that way. Or occasionally I will find a poem where I'm like, there's a really good seed of something here.
Right.
And I'll take that and spin it off into a separate project that okay. may or may not even look like the initial thing. But, you know, there's something I'm trying to get at.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that kind of answers that, because it just seems like so much, like there has to be a volume of work floating around out there with your fingerprints on it to some extent. You
yeah,
know? Like,
yeah. I mean, it's very, decentralized
yes.
or disseminated.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like it's just little pieces of paper hanging on people's walls
right.
or like shoved in someone's notebook somewhere.
I still have mine. It's
yeah.
in my studio.
A lot of people tell me they frame them, and I mean, that's mm-hmm. super cool. I got a text message from, or an Instagram DM, I guess, from someone recently who this is the first person who's done this. He tattooed the first line of the poem that I wrote for him on his arm.
Wow.
And I was like, dude, what?
Wow.
But
well, do you get royalty every time he shows that to someone then?
I don't believe so.
Well, I think, you know, he's probably violating your copyright.
Yeah, well, it was him and his girlfriend both got the same line.
That's some commitment.
How many people are walking around with, like, you know, Marvel tattoos or like
oh,
something from, or like Studio Ghibli? I mean, just like, for example.
Well, okay,
you know
those
what
are
mean?
Two very different sources.
I'm just like okay. media, you know, how many
no,
people.
I know, but one is Marvel and the other one is like good.
I grew up on Marvel before the MCU existed.
Whoa.
All right. I got Thor's hammer right here. Like, that's not...
I like that.
I was explaining to my son where Venom came from originally. I don't know what his current origin story is, but I actually have the comic under my bed still.
Yeah.
Of the original, getting it literally out of a, quote, vending machine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I'm not a fan of the Tom. I like Tom Hardy as Venom, but the movie itself is not good. I just like Tom Hardy.
Anyway, so what were we talking about?
We were talking about people getting his
tattoos.
Yeah, yeah. So,
and then I derailed the conversation.
Well, the point being, though, yeah, it's my fault for bringing up Marvel. But, you know, like, people get Disney, they get all sorts of stuff. You know, like, I'm sure people will get, like, you know, Neil Gaiman tattoos, mm-hmm. or a line from a poem from like T.S. Eliot or something that really vibe with them, like
or
a
DJ, Maya Angelou. You know, or DJ.
I mean, or me now,
just throw
apparently.
It in there. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, that's something that probably will happen more at some point if I continue along this trajectory.
Yeah, it's like the Bhagavad Gita or DJ.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There you go. Like a Bible verse, some random line from a poem I wrote. Some person on the street.
Well, let's try to elevate above the Bible. I think it's worth pointing out, though, that that's, you know, part of the gig of being an artist, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Your stuff is going to be replicated, and people are going to say it over and over again. And that's, I think it's worth saying, it's hard doing what you're doing. I don't think people appreciate the amount of focus it requires. It's not easy to get up and just focus. It sounds like, oh, I'm just going to get up and do my own writing today. That's not really that easy. It's really a lot harder than people think it is. It's a lot harder to do that and to get up and go to a day job. If you have a day job, going to the office, that's way easier than getting up and doing your own work.
Yeah. I mean, I would agree with that because I do both. You know, I currently work at the restaurant. You know, I've worked in journalism. I've worked a million jobs. It's really easy to be responsible to someone else. For me, I mean, then this is just speaking to my experience, really, but I struggle with self-discipline because essentially I'm working huge jobs. I get up every morning and I write until I go to cook for the rest of the day. Mm-hmm. And some days it's really, really hard. And some days I'm not productive at all. And I write for maybe an hour and then I spend the rest of the morning reading or puttering around, like playing my cat or cleaning or something like that. It's something I'm still working on and really, really trying to get to because it comes in waves where some weeks I'm very, very productive and other weeks, like this week, I've barely written at all, to be completely frank. I've had other priorities, like trying to get the move together and applying to jobs. And I had, you know, like a lunch date with a friend and that kind of stuff.
But that's the important thing is you're actually doing it. You're not only making, you've made the commitment and you're following through. You're following through to the point. I think the pinnacle of success that you've had so far is people are putting your prose on their body.
Yeah, yeah.
You should put that on your CV or your resume. Okay,
that's a thought.
That was kind of a joke, but it's also serious.
That's also, it's part of my portfolio at this point. It's some man walking around with that on his arm.
You just bring them to your interview.
Yeah, there you go. He goes, hey, look. look what I did.
I am full of ideas, as I've said before, not necessarily good ones, but ideas.
Yeah, you know, there's a bunch of them.
There are a bunch of ideas in my head, yes. And sometimes they should probably stay there.
A bunch of ideas?
Mm-hmm.
See, when you're looking at your phone...
I know, someone just called and I was waiting for my... Never mind. Yeah.
Thank you. Oh, yeah, no, put it face up so you can still see it.
Well, you gotta keep an eye on it.
You do.
What if someone calls
while we're podcasting? Right. Last time I was filing my nails, he got really pissed off.
If you didn't have any friends, you know nobody would be calling you. So that's one way to deal with it. And also, my phone has this nice little feature. If I put it face down, it rejects calls.
Oh, okay. That's awesome.
My ringer is broken, and so is the thing that vibrates inside. So I have no idea if anyone's calling me unless I'm looking at it.
I accidentally put my silent mode on like 6 months ago.
That's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. And I was like, this is making the phone much better.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing. Yeah. It really is. It really is.
The phone thing, like with running your own small business and stuff, it's like the social media aspect is definitely huge. And that's something recently I've been like paying more attention to. Mm-hmm. Like I'm like trying to get onto Twitter. I don't really understand it. I don't know what, it just seems like a bunch of people screaming into a void.
They're screaming into a void.
Yeah, I don't get it. Yeah, it's very strange.
Well, the pro tip, as I've said before, is to be on Twitter is you follow people you want to follow, you write your own stuff, and you never look at your replies, the people who are replying to you.
Yeah,
don't engage.
But getting seen on Twitter is
difficult,
you don't know where your stuff is going.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. I don't,
and maybe some of us don't care.
Yeah, exactly. I prefer the organic thing. Like if people want to look for the stuff we're mm-hmm. doing, they'll find it and then they'll follow us. I don't want to try to go out there and like follow people to get a follow back and all that nonsense. Right.
So, no, yeah. I agree with that, but I do feel like we're just yelling into a void. I was very active on Twitter many years ago, and then it just got to be this all-consuming scenario, and then I realized it was unhealthy, and I've talked to James about this ad nauseum, and I got off, and I've not been able to re-engage with the platform. I just can't.
Yeah, I get that. I had a similar, like, I don't look at Facebook at all anymore.
No, I don't.
And that one, to me, is kind of useless. Like, I don't think that's a good tool for what I'm doing specifically. Mm-hmm. Twitter's kind of necessary, as is Instagram. So I have to mm-hmm. engage with those if I'm going to be
I do
successful.
Like Instagram. It took me a while to get into it.
Sure, yeah.
But I like looking at it.
Of the three, I think they're interesting comparisons because I think Twitter and Instagram are a lot closer together to what they do is that they allow people to put their message out, mm-hmm. whether it be visual or written. Whereas Facebook... it's just accessible. They're just using your content to drag people in, and then it's not about sharing your content. It's really about them selling you stuff.
Right? Yeah, it's a different platform.
It is.
And then, of course, Instagram is owned by Facebook, but it still feels like a separate thing.
Yeah, the utility of it's definitely different than Facebook. Mm-hmm. Facebook kind of feels like a useless, like other than for just actually keeping up with friends and stuff. Like I have Messenger on my phone. I just don't look at the actual website anymore or like the app even. Mm-hmm. I don't like social media and I'm not big on it at all. But like, okay, so there was a server at my job recently who quit because he launched a graphic design company. He's doing graphic design now. And within the course of like 3-4 months, got like 12,000 followers and is now making enough money just doing graphic design just from Instagram. He just blew up somehow, and he was just like, I don't know how this happened, but now I'm doing this as a full-time job, and I don't need to wait tables anymore.
He's not, quote, an influencer, but he used that to get business for his design.
Yeah, no, it's still, he's not an Instagram influencer in the sense of...
It's basically his marketing
campaign. It was promotion.
It was promotion. It's how he's communicating with clients, how as you said before, it serves as a portfolio. Like, you can go on his Instagram and see all his work. And, you know, people can follow his story, like, and kind of see what he's doing. And he's, like, a funny enough guy that it's engaging and it, you know, becomes this other thing. And now he's running a business through it where he doesn't need, you know, he has a kid and he's providing for his child. And
I think of the three, Instagram is probably the most, or not the most, but the best for the entrepreneur or for the person who's just trying to express themselves.
I would tend to agree.
Yeah, yeah.
The Twitter, I'm not really worried about Elon Musk buying it because... Twitter is a shell of what it could be if someone with half a creative brain would try to do something with it. I think it's been really held back just because they haven't tried a lot. The stuff that they try feels like they're trying to be Facebook without trying to be Facebook.
Sure.
And it just seems like it definitely needs different leadership. Though, you probably haven't seen this, but it was announced that Elon Musk, once he buys it, is going to be interim CEO. Which to me sounds like they're making exactly the same mistake they've made for this past several years or with Jack Dorsey, who was the original creator of Twitter. It was only one of his many CEO roles. And so it's a part-time CEO. You need a full-time CEO to make a company really work. So I don't know where it's going to go.
And Musk is not he's not the person to do that anyways.
Well, the thing about Musk is I don't think you can rely on anything he says to be what he's thinking. There are some people who do and say... You know, what they say and what they think are the same thing. Elon Musk, I think, is the exact opposite. I don't think you can take what he's really thinking based on what he's saying. I think he's, on one hand, a troll when he's posting, but then he's a very successful, competent CEO. So I don't think he does this lightly. And I don't think you can make any assumptions on what Twitter's going to be based on anything he said so far.
Yeah, no, he's absolutely got a different plan than what he has articulated.
That certainly is my hope.
So what's next for you, DJ? You're moving?
Moving, applying to jobs. Yeah, I don't really know. I mean, I got a lot of different projects. I kind of want to focus on my prose rather than the poetry thing. Like, funny enough, I really prefer prose as a form.
I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you about your book. How's that? Do you make any progress?
Oh, the book is still, I haven't touched it.
Okay. I'm sorry I brought it up.
Well, because I have been practicing my prose recently more so than poetry. Like, I do the typewriter thing, and then when I go home, I'll pick out a short story or do writing exercises, whatever. And the more I have been working at that, the more I'm seeing the gaps in my skill set. Like, story is a very hard form. Character development, it's very difficult. Plot development, it's very difficult.
Only if you want to do it well.
Exactly. Well, I would like to. I would like it to be at least as good, if not better, than my poetry, which is currently solid. Like, it's good. I like my stuff. But when I sit down to write a story, I'm like, seeing all these gaps, and I studied English, and I engage with, you know, I read a lot and watch a lot of movies, TV, so I'm engaging with that art form a lot, and in my own writing I'm like, okay, this is not doing what I want.
Don't
it to
be too hard on yourself though, you know, you don't get it to the point where you stop either you stop yourself from publishing or writing because you don't think it's good enough. It's
sure.
probably better than you realize.
I think that's the danger with any art form. Like, most artists are way more self-deprecating than is useful.
Well,
true.
The good ones.
The good ones, yeah.
Then there are the other ones who think they're way better than they actually are.
Yeah, well, if you think you're good at what you do, you're
probably
not.
Wrong.
Yeah. Like, there's, I forget the name of it, but there's like a curve, like a graph that I saw once where, you know, when you're starting a new skill, mm-hmm. You start very, very high because you're like, oh, I'm good at this. This is a mm-hmm. thing I can do naturally. And then the further you get into it, you pretty rapidly drop off and go, oh no, I'm very bad mm-hmm. at this thing. Because you start seeing all of the holes and all the flaws in mm-hmm. your work. And I mean, that's the same way with me, honestly. When I started writing in college, I was like, oh, this is so great. Everything I'm doing is gold. And rereading what I was writing back then, I'm like, there's nothing happening in this. There's no plot. It's just a series of events, like, just barely related. It's very contrived. Like,
yeah, the problem with learning is that the more you learn about a topic, the more you learn you don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's the old joke is, you know, the most self-assured psychiatrist is the person who's taken Psych 101.
Mm-hmm.
After you're taking Psych 101, you think you know everything there is to know about psychology. Been practicing it for like 10 or 20 years, you realize how little you actually know.
Yeah.
Right. So the professional realizes how little they know, and the novice doesn't have any idea how much they mm-hmm. don't know.
And that also pushes you to get better. I mean, that slow realization.
It does. Well, I mean, it can push you one of two ways depending on your level of commitment and like passion for a thing.
Right.
If it is a casual interest, you might just go, oh, well, thing isn't for me, or mm-hmm. like find at least a level of comfort in the level you're at and kind of being a little complacent about the mm-hmm. thing and maybe just kind of hanging out there. Versus if it is something you are deeply passionate about, that is motivating and you will mm-hmm. get better. And I mean, that's mm-hmm. what writing is for me. Like, the more I'm seeing the holes in terms of like my skill set and like what I need to tell this story, I'll go mm-hmm. like that's part of why I stopped working on the novel, is because I saw that
mm-hmm.
and then went, okay, well, how do I fix this? And have since been refining those skills, doing writing exercises, writing short stories rather than full-length novels, and then even just going on YouTube and watching videos and like, how do you write inciting incident? Like, what makes a midpoint, and what those things should be doing, and how you can play with them and maybe like set up expectations and then like dash those expectations to create something more interesting. Mm-hmm. I think storytelling is at a point right now that I'll say music is also kind of in a similar place, where you look at what Hollywood is doing, it's very formulaic, and they're kind of mm-hmm. just churning out like every Pixar movie. And I will preface this by saying I love Pixar. Like, Incredibles 2, great film, very much enjoyed it. But every Pixar movie is the same. It follows the same exact formula and tells the same exact story with mm-hmm. little nuances and changes in detail.
At least with Pixar, we can give them credit. They're making kids' movies. So it's understandable that they're trying to keep a simple premise. I'm sure there's plenty they could do within that, though.
Sure, yeah.
But it's not like we're talking about high art.
Not to go back to Marvel, but every Marvel movie is exactly the same. Like, they all have this same plot. To the point where they keep using the same villain trope over and over again, where it's just the shadow character of the protagonist. Like, that's not, you know, Black Panther did it, Iron Man did it. Like, it's played out, but it sells, so they keep doing it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, because it's very, there's a thing about that structure that's very rewarding to the human psyche, in the same way that, like, certain rhythmic structures are rewarding when you listen to certain songs.
Correct.
Like, they're catchy.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like, these stories are catchy. I find it more interesting to kind of play with those, to play with tropes, and to, you know, it's the classic, you have to learn the rules before you break them thing. So I'm trying to learn the rules right now, that's so I can break them later on. Okay. And that does look like writing a lot of stories that conform to a certain model, you know, like practicing like free tags pyramid or whatever, like three act structures.
Yeah, there's a lot of work in doing stuff. Any given field is a lot more complicated than we think it is.
Hmm.
So I never imagined that you'd have to work at writing. I thought, you know, writer just gets up in the morning and starts writing.
Yeah, it's
they don't practice.
A little more difficult.
The idea of practicing is like, what? I don't know. Because I don't understand. That's because I don't understand writing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm still learning. Like, even I was very against writing exercises for like most of my life, because I was just like, why would I work on this random prompt when I could be working on something that I actually want to be working on? And it wasn't until maybe like 6 months ago that I was like, oh, this is the equivalent of like sketching for the writer.
Yes.
Like, an artist will go out to a coffee shop and just sketch people or do a live model drawing or whatever, and the subject is irrelevant. You're just practicing a skill. And it really took me that long for that to click and be like, oh, I'm just refining skills here. It's not about the topic. And that's almost what the typewriter thing is too. Like, it's just getting bombarded with prompts and you just got to make it work somehow. I think the one-on-one interaction, I try to make it genuine and I try to make it good. And like, good being something someone can relate to, and it really speaks to what they're...
I think it's worth pointing out, when we keep talking about the typewriter thing, what you do is you go out on First Friday art events.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You sit down in an art space with your typewriter, and people come up to you and ask you, and that you will write a poem for them based on some prompt that they give you. So
yeah.
That's what we're just, you know, now that we're an hour in.
Yeah, for
clarity. We should just clarify what you actually do.
Yeah, yeah. People will come up and it can be a word, it can be a whole phrase, a sentence. Like, some people will just go up and, or just come up to me and be like, this is what my day was like today. Maybe something about that. Be like, okay. So it can literally be anything. First Friday's tonight. Like, I'm going to be doing that.
Right,
downtown,
it is tonight.
Downtown tonight. Yeah, I've been hitting the farmer's market. I did the Melrose Festival in March. I was going to do the vintage market, but apparently they shut down.
Oh.
I don't know what happened to that, but...
It got old.
Oh.
I'm sorry. How do you feel about puns?
I'm for them. They hurt me, but as I said before, I'm a masochist, so...
Okay. You are a masochist.
Just, yeah. A really, really good pun, though. Like, most puns are painful. But a really good one will get you in a way you don't expect.
I get that, yeah.
Is often very, very funny.
It transcends being a pun. You don't really want to think of it as a pun.
Yeah, exactly. Shakespeare dealt in puns. That's high art.
Mm-hmm. So will you continue the typewriter scenario as you move on?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if for no other reason, it's a form of income.
Exactly.
But also I do very much enjoy doing it, and it's great practice, and I think the benefit to or of moving to DC versus Phoenix is Phoenix is very, very spread out. Like, the urban sprawl here is real.
It is real.
And there's not a great, I have not to this day found a really good area to just set up on like a Thursday night and go make money. If I'm in San Diego, I can go down to Little Italy and make $80 to $100 just on any given day. But like, you can do that in DC as well, because it is a little bit more centralized, and just more people as well. Like, I can go to Chinatown, and I promise that you, I will do well. Or like Chevy Chase, DuPont Circle.
Wow.
Like, there is multiple areas. As long as it's not federal land, which like a lot of DC is federal, so that will definitely be an issue.
Because
you can't busk on federal land. That's like a law. They will kick you off. But as long as I'm not on the mall, I'm okay.
Very cool.
Yeah.
I'll look forward to continuing to follow you on Instagram.
Yeah, you'll see my posts.
I will.
Just as a purely selfish question, do you enjoy the museums down there in Museum?
I absolutely adore it. My favorite part of DC is the Smithsonian.
Okay, so I'm envious of you for that.
How's that?
I'm envious of you.
I am too.
I mean, they are world-class museums, and they're all free. The art museums down there, wild, like absolutely insane.
We made the point a few shows ago that the less you pay to get into a museum, the probably better it is.
Yeah, because this is the same with London museums. Most of those are free. I went to the Prado when I was in Madrid. I think it was like a few, like 10 euro or something. Like, it was like not a lot, like 10, 15 euro. Yeah, which is, I mean, that's like, you know, that's like the Spanish equivalent of the Louvre. Like, there was, you know, there was original Picasso's that I got to see.
Yeah, I don't remember the Louvre very clearly, aside from people just kind of lying around. I wasn't impressed, I guess.
Lying around?
Yeah, it just, there was a very relaxed attitude.
Oh.
It's Paris.
The guards were half Paris. Asleep. Yeah. Yeah. Is there anything you want to finish up with?
I'm good.
I would like you to read a poem or something just in closing.
Okay, so this is like a piece I have done once as a performance. It's really more of a written work, but reading it, I was like, oh, no, this could absolutely work at like an open mic or something like that.
Okay.
Not quite a slam, not really that vibe, but all right.
All right.
Here we go. Soul tired, weak kneed, and I will fall for anything. The easiest mark on the street, the poet. Too consumed by the beauty of the world, he is choked by it. Blinded by his own reluctance to damn the darkness, he becomes its victim, when all he wanted was to give ugly its worth. This is a terrible sin. My friend says I am the slowest person he knows, but after years of gradual epiphany, I am speeding towards the realization that reverence should have its limits, and redemption cannot be found in words. I often wonder why it takes me so long to learn what is so obvious to others. Why repeated failure and mistakes do not translate into an education, but only anxiety-inducing regret. I am made of bad tics and awkward silences. High school turned me into an existentialist, college an atheist, and life a God-fearing man. Now I find myself in a constant state of apology as I trespass against every one of my beliefs. So maybe I've been watching too much pseudoscience spiritual nonsense on YouTube, but I can't help hoping essence can be held in your hands, reshaped into new life, and lived in. If this were possible, I might master the oldest kind of alchemy, how to grow a wound into a bouquet. I pray my slow-going blooms into patience, and my ignorance flowers into wisdom. But till then, may I sit in this moment for one, maybe two lifetimes, understand its lessons, and unlearn the teachings of every cycle I've been caught in. This is Maya. This is Mahia. And if this existence does indeed come first, all of this is possible.
Oh, beautiful.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. That was beautiful.